All right, well, thank you very much for that. I have to say that as much as you like the new stuff, there is nothing like the good old-fashioned hymns. Things you learn as a child, and they're still there. I won't say how old I am, because everyone just laughs at me when I tell them how old I am. Good afternoon. I have to share, I had the most depressing thought this morning when I was getting out of bed. Well, two of them, actually. One, the week's almost over. Boy, does it fly by very quickly. The other one was, there's no way that I'm going to match the energy of Mike James or the cuteness of the children's choir. So you know, it's kind of downhill from here. But on the plus side, today is my day off. So I have to give a shout out to Gabe Dodge out there, who is taking care of the visuals. And so if anything goes wrong, it's don't come to me about it. But to throw this out there, any of you who would love to learn audio or visual, new skills, take back to your church so you can do wonderful things, we would love to train our replacements. So, or not to scare you away, just have someone to spell us every now and then. Oh, I heard a story a couple years ago. It was about a reporter who had interviewed Ronald Reagan while he was in office. And as reporters like to do, every now and then they'd try to throw a zinger question in there to kind of throw him off guard. And this question to him was, how does it feel to be the most powerful man in the world? And as Reagan did, he stopped for a moment and thought, well, every day when I go to work, I find a piece of paper on my desk. And on that paper, it says all the places I'm going to go, all the things I'm going to do, all the people I'm going to see. You should probably find whoever writes that paper and ask them how it feels to be the most powerful person in the world. Now, as critics do, they interpret that response, and some say, well, here's just, you know, a classic evasion from a well-seasoned politician. For others, they were reading between the lines and thinking, there's a subtle indication that someone's pulling strings behind the scenes in Washington. But for most of us, you just understood that it was a nice, humorous recognition of the fact, even the president himself, he requires a team. That's a role that takes more than one person to fill. He's got advisors, he's got consultants, he's got secretaries, he has analysts, he has all these people. And sometimes, we may laugh about it, but sometimes his role is to stand up and just read what's on the teleprompter. That might be his job today. But I'd like you to finish this quote for me. Behind every great man... Okay, there are actually several different versions, and the one that I saw that actually made me laugh out loud was, is a woman rolling her eyes? But we understand this intuitively. Anyone who's going to accomplish something, anyone who's going to do something spectacular, do something that's going to make a difference, they need a support team. They need people behind them who are helping them. And it can be a parent, it can be a spouse, it can be a mentor, it can be a friend, it might be more than them. But if you've ever come to a performance, and I'm not going to call this a performance, but I guess it does fit, but if you've ever gone to a performance and seen someone on stage and to realize for every actor up there, there's one person controlling his mic. There's another person controlling the lights. There's somebody who put his costume together. There's someone who put all the props in the right places. Somebody wrote the words that he's going to speak. There's a lot of hands that went in so that one person can have their moment and impact people. Within our society, we have people of skill. They're people of talent. They're ambition. They go out there and they do things, and we admire them. And they are strong, they're intelligent, they're hardworking, and they change the world. We look at business leaders like Bill Gates or Elon Musk. We look at celebrities like Oprah or LeBron James. And yeah, we look at politicians like Joe Biden or Donald Trump, and it's hard to accomplish something. We look at them and we see them as people who make a difference in our community and in our society. But then there are other people. There are people who spend their energies encouraging and enabling and teaching and healing. And these are the people who bind us together. These are the people that help us live together as a community, as a society. And they probably carry just as much influence as the leaders. Because no matter how strong and accomplished you are, eventually life is going to tear you down. Eventually, it's going to break you down, and you need people there to help you and to put you together. You think of a wall made of brick. We call it a brick wall because it has bricks, and the bricks are solid, and they support the weight of the wall. But without the mortar holding it all together, that wall would not last very long. And often the people that the world considers important, they're greatly influenced by people that we would consider are insignificant. Now, as a believer, and especially listening to our choir earlier, we have all heard that admonition to be lights to the world, haven't we? We understand that there's kind of a responsibility that we're supposed to maintain a healthy influence on the world around us. Exactly how do we do that? And that's part of what I want to go in today. There was, it's not quite a parable. This is in Luke chapter 14. Jesus was speaking to those around him, to his disciples, but also to those who were listening. And it was actually a social event that he just noticed their actions, and he had this to say to them. This is Luke 14, verse 8. It says, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him. And he who invited you, both of you, will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this man,' and in disgrace you proceed to occupy the last place. But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who is invited comes, he may say, 'Friend, move up higher,' and then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you." And this, I think, of all the parables, this is, quite relevant, because I think we've all been at weddings or social events where, what have we done? Where are you going to sit? Well, I don't know. I don't want to sit with him. I don't want to be over here with these people. And you kind of have that little jockeying of position. But that admonition not to think too highly of yourself. You know, start on the low end. Don't seek the praise. You know, this is something, you know, even if you don't think it, assume the position of humility. And this is a foundational character. If you look at the verse right after, it says, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Don't seek out honor and admiration. It will come. And in time, when it is deserved, it will be there. At another time, Jesus actually pulled a child out of the crowd, and he told him, "Unless you become like this child, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven." And that's pretty powerful. To say, you're not going. Unless you see the world like a child sees it, unassuming, you know, with eyes full of wonder of all the things, the endless possibilities. You know, a child is powerless in its own eyes. Everybody has authority over them. Their ego quite hasn't matured yet. And we have so many problems in our societies where mankind just seems to get in its own way. It seems to sabotage its own efforts. Here's a quote from Ronald Reagan, exactly, although I've heard it from other people. But he said, "There is no limit to the amount of good you can do if you don't care who gets the credit." And I think fundraisers learned this long ago. You need money for a project? Well, you can say with your sales pitch, "Hey, this is a good cause. Come and help us out." Of course, you can also say, "You give us some money, we'll put your name on the door. We'll name the building after you." If you're not worried about being the one under the spotlight, there's a lot of things you can do. You know, there's a lot of papers that have been published where you fight over whose name goes first. You know, there's a lot of churches where there's hurt feelings because his name was up on the ledger and not mine, or was above it. You know, I think science and religion share this malady. We get derailed because we argue over who's going to get the credit for it. Focusing on what needs to be done and not who is watching. Now, Christians will often lament over a hard decision, and this will often be what you hear from them. "I just want to do God's will. I don't know which way to go. I just want to do what He wants for me, what is right for me." But submitting to that will is not an easy process. It means you have to let go of a lot of things, let go of a lot of your expectations, a lot of your desires. And leave behind a lot of fear, a lot of jealousy, a lot of anger. People like to hold on to their grudges. It's kind of a security blanket for some. They like to hold on to their hurts. I want to read a psalm for you. Not the whole thing, but this is in Psalm 37. It was something I was forced to memorize when I was a child in school. I was not happy about it because it was King James Version and I stumbled over a lot of the these and thous. But as an adult, I appreciate it a great deal. In fact, I've gone back to it on several occasions. In Psalm 37, it says, "Do not fret, do not worry, do not be anxious because of evildoers. Do not be envious towards wrongdoers, for they will wither quickly like the grass and fade like the green herb." Don't worry. Don't get angry. You know, don't concern yourself with what everyone else is doing, and particularly, you know, those people who aren't doing it right. It just seems to be our habit. We look out and oh, look at him. Can you believe he's getting away with that? But it tells you, verse 3, trust in the Lord. Do good. Dwell in the land. Cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord and trust also in him. We know how we're supposed to live. You know, we can read it. We can see it. In our heart, we know we're driven to do, to walk in this way, to walk in this path. We also know that the way other people choose is not stable. You look at the person who's cheating on his taxes. You look at the person who's cheating on their spouse. You look at the people who are cutting the corners. It can tear us up. That's unfair. Why are they prospering? Why are they in office? But it tells you, don't worry. Don't get hung up over it. Verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in the way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. You know, when we spend time and energy thinking about what other people do, it kind of, sometimes it churns in us, and sometimes we just, the injustice of it, it's so unfair. Can you believe what that politician said? Can you believe what that celebrity did? You know that we are giving them power over us? As one comedian said, they live rent-free right there. They take up space in our mind and in our heart. They will fire up our emotions. We'll get all riled up over it. May even change our opinions on things or the way we see the world. At the very least, it distracts us. Those aren't the kind of thoughts we should be having. We know what we're supposed to do, and we should do it joyfully. Rest in the Lord. Trust in him. Commit your way to the Lord. Because we know this is the way that will last. This is the solid path. This is the trustworthy path. In the long run, it's the best way to live. Now, we've talked about being vulnerable, so I'm going to be vulnerable for a moment and confess something to you. This is not a popular opinion, but it is just an opinion, so you feel free to disagree with me. But I will say for anyone recording this, if it's going on YouTube, they may ban us over it. So just, this is slightly tongue-in-cheek and slightly serious, but here it goes. I am proud of my country. And really, I know what we've all been through in the last year. And funny, because the first time I wrote this message was 10 months ago, and I had no clue what was coming around the corner. None of us did. But we all know about just that spirit of contentiousness that is everywhere. And it just, and for the most part, we haven't given in. It's bothered us. The world seems to be going crazy. Now, we know, you know, I go to work, I go to the grocery store, I go to the gas station. There are so many different kinds of people. We all live together. We're of different backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, religious backgrounds, political views, social classes. But for the most part, we work together in peace and we prosper. And yet, if I turn on the news, you know, if I pull out my phone and start looking at, you know, what's the latest blip, Americans are terrible people. You know, we're terrible. We're racist. We're bigots. We abuse women and children. We're obsessed with making money and being entertained. We neglect the poor. We neglect the environment. Half of us just want to drop out and get high. You know, the other half just want to stockpile on guns and prepare for the end of the world. And to be fair, I know some people who actually fit that description pretty well. But there's over 300 million of us. We're going to step on our feet every now and then. There's going to be toes that are going to be stepped on. But these aren't American problems. These are human problems. But when I look out, for the most part, we've done pretty well. Most of the people I work and I work around and I see and I meet, they just love their families. No, they just want to work hard, pay the bills. They're kind to strangers. They give to charity. They want the world to be a safe place for them and their children, and they want it to be safe for everyone else. We get along fine, and for the most part, we prosper. And I am proud of that, because I think we get a... I don't think we're given enough credit, because it has been chaotic. And when you consider, this is old news by now, we know that a foreign nation has actively tried to disrupt our election process. Actively. They've infiltrated our social media. They are manipulating our news media. They are trying to disrupt us and tear us apart. That's powerful to have an enemy who's trying to tear you apart. Now, as a Christian, I think we understand there are spiritual forces that do that, and on a personal level. But this is open. We know it. They can't defeat us, so they try to break us apart. We also are struggling with a new environment. And I want to put this out here because for most of humanity, we have lived at the speed of horse. And if you know what that means, when something happens, someone would have to get on a horse, ride to the next town before anyone else knew about it. And that's how information moved. And there have been battles that have been fought and cities that have been taken after the peace treaty was signed, after the surrender happened. The news just never got to the soldiers, so they kept on fighting. When the telegraph was invented, that was life-changing, because now news moved at the speed of electricity, which is pretty darn fast. It still took someone to translate and to send it out. But when the phone was invented, now face-to-face or voice-to-voice, person-to-person, I can call someone up, talk to them, information moves faster and faster. And, of course, you know how it is today. Someone can be on the other side of the planet. They can pull out one of these. They can video something that's going on. And within minutes, thousands of people, millions of people maybe, are watching and sharing. Within a day or two, billions of people might be watching. Instant information, no context, no perspective. Our brains weren't made for this. Okay, this is a new way to gather information that we need time to adjust, because normally we have time for reflection. We hear something, we think about it, we compare it to our values, we compare it to our experiences, we get a different perspective just to find out, you know, can I verify that this is true? And this problem's not going away. We have to find a solution somehow, but we live in a world, information is now, and we react. We don't think. And I'm sure that none of us wake up with a piece of paper on your desk telling you what you're doing, but I'm going to pull this out again because I know a lot of you, you check this to find out where you're going to go, who you're going to see, and what you're going to do. Whoever programs this is pretty powerful. Now, we think we're in control of it. That's a nice illusion to have. You know, I know there's one documentary, at least on Netflix, that is eye-opening, but if you listen to some of the engineers, some of the administrators from the social media groups like Google or Netflix or YouTube, and they tell you 10 years ago, you know, we were designing these programs not to sell you things, to keep you connected. They want your attention right there. And they wrote programs. The fancy word is an algorithm. Now, it watches you. It sees everything you do, so it can predict you. And then once it can predict your behavior, it knows how to keep your attention. Human nature is predictable. Okay, it's not that complicated. Analyze it. Lay it out. See its tendencies. It's not hard to predict what a human will do. And a predictable mind that is easily manipulated is also easily controlled. Here's my opinion again. The American public is being pushed. We feel it. We're being prodded. We're being manipulated. What makes us uneasy is we don't know where. We don't know why. We just feel it. We all have our ideas, but none of us really know. And when you see the way things normally have been done start to unravel, it makes us feel powerless. It's not a good feeling. And yet, and this is why I want to throw this out here, we haven't been assassinating our political leaders. We have not been burning down government buildings, although I may have to correct this before too long. There has been no ethnic cleansing. And you know, in the world today, that is a very real situation. Why haven't we exploded? Why hasn't there been a civil war? Why haven't we, you know, like a powder keg, just gone at it? Because you know the feeling's there, the anxiety is there. Well, I was thinking about this, and the answer came to me, of all places, in a concrete plant. And one of our customers, and if you've ever been in the room with someone who is passionate about their job and doesn't get a chance to talk to people much, I learned a lot about concrete on that day. Because he was proud. It was in, if you've never seen a concrete plant, you've got silos and conveyor belts everywhere and tractors picking up material and dumping it on the belt, and they go up to the top of the tower, then a truck pulls underneath and he pushes a button and a chute opens up and it drops into the truck, and he does all these different buttons so he gets the right amount of the stone. And the stone can be big, it can be little. It's, the aggregate is the fancy word for it. You can have, it can be gravel, it can be sand, 70%, just so you know. And then, of course, you have to add the water so that it mixes it up. And then the critical element, the binder, what causes it to solidify and be hard. It's all sorts of different chemicals. You want to go to Home Depot, you can buy it. It's called Portland cement. That's the commercial term for it. But here he's telling me how, well, yeah, you've changed the proportions a little bit, and then you can change the strength and the workability. When you understand, most of our modern society is built on concrete. I mean, reinforced concrete is what holds the world. You see a skyscraper, you see steel, you see glass. It's sitting on concrete. And that is the infrastructure of what our world rests on. So what binds us as a society? What pulls us together? What keeps us strong? Because we do have strong people in our society. I'm not going to say they're a majority. I don't know how many they are. But they're good people, strong people, solid values. They work hard. They sacrifice, not just for their own family, because they believe that a society that's free, a society that's fair, is what we need. Most of them are unassuming. Most of them are anonymous. They don't want to be in the spotlight. They just want to live their lives. And yet, they're just people. But there's enough of them. They keep us solid. They keep us strong. We're going to have our radicals, we're going to have our outlaws, we're going to have the people on the fringe, but there are some good, solid people in this world. Some of them, I'd say, are in this room. What quality would give them this power? I'm going to go to a passage, I think Brent already took it from me. It's Philippians chapter 2. But he read from the non-inspired version. He even told me that, so maybe this version will have a little bit more meat on it. But in verse 5, it says, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. And I just want to stop there for a moment, because there's an attitude that Jesus Christ had. Okay, we're not talking power from on high. It's a frame of mind. Okay, it's a way of seeing the world, a way of thinking. And from context, it means we can have it too. If you were to ask any historian who was the most influential person in the world, I'm pretty sure everyone wouldn't say Jesus Christ, but I'm pretty sure most or all would have him in the top five. Okay? Without a spiritual confession, we understand this man changed the world on a fundamental level. To do this as a man, think about that. Okay? Because historians don't look at him as a divine being. He did not come in power. We entered part of our own doctrine we read earlier. He came, he divested himself. He came here as a human being, and then he lived a humble life of service. Actually, it goes on in verse 6. It says, although he existed in the form of God, he did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped. But he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And for this reason also, God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow to those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And if you understand that little passage right there, we have that same formula that we had earlier. Humility. Being unassuming. In the end, humility will bring success. In the end, it will bring influence. This is the solid path we are talking about. And he walked it. This was his example. This was the template. Do it this way. You'll have happiness, you'll have peace, you'll have success. And you will influence the world. There was a moment in his life, in his ministry. It was the day before he was going to be arrested, or evening of being arrested, before everything he was going to do was going to come into fruition. And I think we remember the story of him going into the garden and praying. He wanted his disciples to be there. I always thought that was fascinating. No, come with me. I want you. In fact, he scolded them because they fell asleep on a couple occasions. But he goes and he prays. And that phrase that is written down, he tells his father, "If it is possible, let this cup pass from me." And to think, he knew what his path was. He knew what was coming. He knew the importance of it, and what his calling was on this earth. And when the time came to do it, he didn't want to go. And if you understand, that's a little profound. He didn't want to do it. And it took him a couple paths, a couple tries going back, and eventually said, "Okay, he's ready. Okay, Father, your will be done." The fact that he wanted his disciples to see that, I think, is so profound because it's the same path we walk. We know what our calling is, and it's not easy. And we're going to go up to the brink, and we're going to sing our hymns, and we're going to say our prayers, but the act of following through, if you're saying, you step back, because what it's asking of you is everything. Is that all that you have? Okay, this is going to cost you, in the end, your life, maybe now, maybe later. Your desire, your plans, your dreams, you sacrifice all of that if you're going to submit to his plan. What we're doing is very hard. But the world was changed because that one man, as a man, got up there, he made his choice, and he did what he was told to do. He followed his calling. And this was a template. You realize his disciples who followed, they were just men. Average men, but they turned the world upside down. They went out and they took those ideas, this idea that if you want to make the world a better place, you change yourself. And the generations that followed did the same thing. The men and women who followed in their footsteps that we are a part of as well. They pursued the vision. They accepted the calling of a life of humble service and sacrifice. You know, I think about there was a moment in Israel's history. They had a king because they wanted one, and God gave them one. And this king kind of made some bad choices. And so God sent a prophet, sent Samuel to Saul, and he asked him this question. He said, "Is it not true, though you were little in your own eyes, you were made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed you over as king?" God made him king when he was nothing, when he was insignificant. When he thought nothing of him, he was running away when they were trying to find him. When he was insignificant but willing to follow God's lead, that's when he was powerful. That's when he could do some things. His sense of self wasn't there yet. He was just a child. He just trusted and he walked the path. And he, for a while, he was a good man and a good king. But what happens when your ego comes up? What happens when that pride starts to take over and go, "Hey, I'm pretty good at this. And I got some ideas, and I think I can do this better on my own." But it takes willing to lay down our pride, give up our expectations, and accept his guidance. You do that, there is no limit to what we can accomplish. Now, I've said the prayers, and I've sung the songs. Okay? There's nothing like asking the Holy Spirit to guide you. You know, there is nothing like saying, "God, fill me, God, lead me." But if you read the accounts of what happens when the Holy Spirit moves, it's a frightening thing. The divine nature, it's strange. We can't predict it. We can't analyze it to describe. You know, no analytics can describe it. No algorithm can predict it. What happens, happens. He is sovereign. And when his Spirit leads, it goes where it wants to. And the mind that follows its guidance is the same. can't be predicted. They can't be manipulated. Can't be controlled. The mind that cannot be controlled is a mighty force in the world. Verse 14 says, do all things without grumbling or disputing. And we could probably just take the whole sermon right on there, because I know a lot of you and I know myself, we are not there. That's a hard place to go, to not grumble, to not dispute. So that you will be prove yourself to be blameless and innocent children of God without reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you appear as lights in the world. And there it is. Our behavior will be different. It will be noticed. That is how you influence. You walk a different path. But even, where is it? Holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. But even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you. That Paul regarded his life as a living sacrifice. And you understand, when you look at what he did not fear what his enemies were going to do to him. He did not fear what the Romans would do. He did not fear what the Pharisees would do. He did not fear what the mob would do. And boy, that's a little contemporary when we think of what's going on around us. That he could walk out, say what he needed to say, do what he needed to do with full confidence that this was God's will in his life. And yeah, there were times he was arrested and thrown in jail, beaten by the mob, and drug out of the city, left for dead on one occasion. And what did he do? He just got up, dusted himself up, and kept on going. It's a powerful testimony. He was not intimidated by the powers that be, because he saw the power that God worked through him and through his people. He was a living sacrifice. That's how he saw it. The day that we can do the same, that we can lay our fears aside, okay, would not be afraid of what the crowd's going to say, not be afraid of what our adversary may do, what our enemies may do to us, what the authorities may do to us, but trust the path that's laid before us and trust that he will uphold those who follow it. The day that we can let go of our anger, stop being angry at people who wronged us or who hurt us or someone who's got it better than we do, that's a big step. But the day we can let that go, the day we can cease feeling the need to judge somebody else because they're on a different path, they don't look like us, we're told don't even worry about them. Walk your path. The day that we decide to live our lives as living sacrifices, that's the day when we fully realize and submit to our calling. And I think that will be the day when we realize just how powerful we really are.